Our last presentation of the afternoon will be by Dr. Clive Grant. He'll be talking about four generations and the impact on surgery. Dr. Grant is a professor of surgery at Mayo Clinic in Rochester and has enlightened us so far very nicely, so I look forward to this.
I appreciate those, all of you who are staying for this. I can tell you right up front that this will be quite different from the endocrine presentations that I've given previously. My hope is that you will at least in part enjoy this as much as I found it interesting to research and put this presentation together. Let me go back just a second. The title, Four Generations and the Impact on Surgery, that relates to just what it says. Four generations exist in the workforce right now. And let me give you a quote. It says, "Our civilization is doomed if the unheard of actions of our younger generation are allowed to continue." Does that sound like something you've said or at least thought of recently? Well, in fact, that comes from a 4,000-year-old Sumerian tablet. So maybe things don't change that dramatically over time. Now, the newer generation would say, this is the response. My generation will be running the world soon. And if we say 4 + 4 = 9, that's the way it's going to be. Friction between generations is not new. Over the past 10 to 15 years, for the first time in history, four distinct generations have coexisted in the workforce. And while certain basic values of integrity, honesty, respect, and recognition are shared by all generations, the priorities and attitudes regarding education, work style, work-life balance, authority, especially communication, have evolved and sometimes have caused misunderstandings, if not outright contempt. Discussion between members of different generations often generates more heat than light. Social science research that forms the conceptual basis for defining generations, while far different than the science of medical science, has generated a prolific number of papers, editorials, presentations, and even books on this subject. Physicians in general, and surgeons in particular, are only now encountering the most recent generation, so-called Gen Y or millennials, as they have worked through residency, fellowships, and have just begun to enter the surgical workforce. The education and business sectors have dealt with these generational differences for more than a decade, and their assessments, experience, and recommendations can be valuable to us. Mentoring these young adults requires us to understand the traits and characteristics of each generation, and especially to recognize striking differences that need to be bridged. A generation is defined as an identifiable group that shares birth years, significant life events, at a critical developmental stage. This leads to mutual values, beliefs, attitudes, and behaviors. At teenage, a person's focus turns from inward to outward. This is a critical time in individual development, influenced by world events, family, especially parents, peers, media, popular culture, with formation of values, priorities, and measures of success. These opinions will influence individuals for a lifetime. And even though people generally become more conservative as they age, research shows that core generational values actually change very little. These differences are real, striking, and mainstream. They're not confined to just a select number within each generation. Excuse me. However, without question, not all members of a defined age range behave according to the corresponding generational label. These labels are just reasonable generalizations. And in addition, I'm a reporter, not really an investigator on this topic. At the turn of the millennium, when the newest Gen Ys were knocking on the collective corporate doors, the CEO of Deloitte observed, "My kids have very different attitudes than I do concerning life, careers, you name it. Something is happening that goes beyond my being old and their being young." And many of our partners are sensing the same thing. In the ensuing 14 years, the relevance of generational differences and methods to facilitate collaboration drew immediate attention. Over 80% of Deloitte's external, client-facing, deal-making employees were under the age of 35. So let's look at the four generations. To illustrate just how different generations can be, let's take something seemingly simple: ordering coffee. Traditionalists, coffee with cream, please. Simple, straightforward, polite, respectful. And those times couldn't be anything else because they only had two choices, Folgers and Maxwell House. Boomers, large latte to go. They needed to get to work for the next 12 plus hours. Gen X, individualists, breaking away. Organic five-country espresso blend, medium grind. Give us the beans and we'll blend them ourselves. And then here come the millennials. Grande, non-fat, sugar-free, half-calf, two-pump vanilla latte with 1 inch of foam, 180 degrees, light whip, and a sprinkle of cinnamon and sugar. This order, while sitting in a drive-thru with a long line of cars, you think I'm exaggerating? The evidence is my third daughter. So how about the traditionalists, so-called silent generation veterans, birth years 1922 to 1945? Traditionalists have been described as loyal. They follow the rules, no nonsense, motivated by a job well done, and a handwritten note would be reward enough. They feel fortunate to have a job, not that the company is lucky to have them. Their concept, let's do one thing, do it right, and move on. They were loyal and loyal employees, company men, expecting to stay with a single company throughout their career, and they expected to pay their dues, gradually working up the company ladder, and wanted to leave a legacy. Delayed gratification was the norm. They're dedicated, patriotic, good citizens, conventional, respect order and structure, and those who chose medicine viewed it as a vocational calling, not just a job. Their profession and self-identity are one and the same. Sacrifice is perhaps the most apt word to describe them. Everything done in order to provide a better future for their family and especially their children. They worked hard to live. They respect hierarchy, law and order, conformity. They're cautious, financially conservative, probably the last generation in this country that understands money. For every penny into Social Security, and they remember when it was established in 1934, they expect a penny back. They pay in cash, but save as much as they can. Their preferred feedback, no news is good news. If life does not seem fair, they take the bumps along the road with quiet resolve. They had a first-person experience with Pearl Harbor and World War II, the Depression, and the New Deal. They respect authority, duty and honor, and a command and control style of leadership. For them, there were two absolutes, church and government. In the Midwest, manual labor as children often meant finishing morning chores, including feeding the animals before breakfast. The comparison of children today is loading the dishwasher. Not quite the same. Theirs was the last generation where, as a rule, women stayed at home, raised the family on dad's single income. Divorce was a scandal, if not a disgrace. Their heroes included Babe Ruth, FDR, MacArthur, Patton, Eisenhower, Churchill, and Superman. Some may remember when the Star Spangled Banner became the national anthem in 1931. For learning, they want a teacher with formal education options. They'll attend a lunchtime seminar, sit in folding chairs with paper plates, and listen to the speaker. Higher education was a dream realized by the minority. And to study, they were taught to isolate themselves from TV, record player, busy sidewalks or streets. Clear a study space with good lighting, a straight back chair, paper, pencils, eraser, a silent cocoon. New technology in their years included the vacuum tube radio, rotary phones, and a hand crank mimeograph machine. They can even recollect the smell of a freshly minted mimeographed paper. They have only a rudimentary acquaintance with computers and the internet. They prefer work communication to be face-to-face, formal, direct, respectful, or a typed letter. Even though less than 10% of the present American workforce is comprised of traditionalists, the current hierarchical structure of academic medicine was largely created and fostered by this oldest generation of faculty. Now let's move to the baby boomers, or so-called boomers, the me generation, birth years 46 to 1964. Now I confess to being part of this generation, and the characteristics that I'll review ring pretty true for me in most respects. Overwhelmingly, boomers are characterized by their work ethic. Early to arrive, late to leave the office, the term workaholic was coined for them. They live to work, identify and define themselves through their work. It's an anchor of personal fulfillment in their lives. Not only does work define their own self-worth, it also sets the standard by which others are evaluated, a tension point between boomers and later generations. They expect others to follow the same work ethic and same work hours at the office. They are willing to sacrifice their personal lives for their professional success. In fact, self-sacrifice is considered a virtue. So busy with work were boomers that they usually had 1 to 2 kids. I must have missed that. I had 4. They have great ambition. They're optimists. Their perfect career would be to excel, make a difference, achieve the corner office with a lofty title, and importantly, be well compensated. They are responsible for changing the work week from 40 to 60 hours. Only now, when retiring or nearing retirement, are they anxious to scale back. Thoughts of work-life balance arrived late in their careers. They're driven by personal gratification, but like traditionalists, they maintain institutional loyalty and are often willing to work beyond the traditional time of retirement, albeit with their newly conceived reduced time commitment. They're motivated. They want to be rewarded with recognition and salary. They pride themselves filling their houses, garages, shed out back, even renting extra space in the eternal race to accumulate more stuff. Because boomers represent the largest generational group at an estimated 80 million, they grew up in a competitive environment. They currently have a dominant workforce accounting for 55% of the active physicians, and they occupy the positions of authority. Boomers want to ease gradually into retirement, which is fortunate as their sheer mass of human capital will require years to replace in both number and expertise. They feel promotions should be earned, requiring years of achievement, respecting authority, but more a change of command, reflecting a recognition of hierarchy, but a belief in the potential for advancement. Their view of work is deeply ingrained. They may become judgmental, passive-aggressive, and intolerant of challenges to these views. They grew up with a stay-at-home mother, hardworking father, a beaver-cleaver family, if you remember that, with an abundant, healthy post-war economy and a safe environment where they had the freedom to go anywhere in the neighborhood, unsupervised, and play without concern. They attended schools without security guards or metal detectors. Later in adulthood, when rushing to catch a plane, they could arrive within 10 minutes of takeoff and actually make it. Their educational system compared to today emphasized a higher level of proficiency in basic literary tools, grammar, and written expression, in contrast to traditionalists for whom higher education was a dream, boomers viewed it as a birthright. But as children of the 1960s, their sense of idealism soured to cynicism as network TV covered not one, but three assassinations: Watergate, the Vietnam War, civil rights struggles, trust in, and status of government were tarnished. And the sentiment of never trust anyone over 30 evolved. The sexual revolution, rock and roll, long hair, Neil Armstrong stepping on the moon, and credit cards all influenced boomers. Technologic breakthroughs included color TV, Polaroid instant print photos, touch tone phones, and calculators. They idolized John Kennedy, John Lennon, and John Glenn. Communication was face-to-face or a meeting. Only much later in life did email enter their repertoire. And as such, they are labeled digital immigrants as compared to Gen Xers, who are digital pioneers, and millennials, who are digital natives. As adult, however, the boomers' divorce rate skyrocketed to 50%. Families were redefined to include single parent, probably a reflection of years of work over home attitude. With aging, their emphasis has shifted to recognize more work-life balance. And realization of their own health has prompted increasing numbers to join health clubs and weight loss centers with their usual determination and vigor. Now, how about Gen X, or Generation X, or Xers, birth years 65 to 80? Sandwiched between the 80 million boomers and the potentially even larger 90 million millennials are the much smaller group, 46 million Xers. Capsulizing this generation would be self-reliant and skeptical. Little wonder why, given the tragedy and scandal that pervaded their lives. A tripling of the divorce rate, Watergate and Clinton scandals, explosion of two NASA shuttles, church scandals, deterioration of Social Security, corporate downsizing, and even dissolving of pension plans with companies effectively abandoning their most loyal employees. This led to a serious mistrust of anything corporate. Either single-parent homes or both parents working became common, creating a new phenomenon, the latchkey kids. They grew up with three Ds: disappointment, disasters, diminished expectations. Afternoon TV included CNN with 24/7 reporting and gave them front row seat coverage of the 1993 World Trade Center bombing. Xers responded by developing independence, adaptability, and resilience. They seek a different path than their boomer parents of work-life balance. They view medicine as a job, and they want to limit their work hours to allow more time for their personal lives, now, not later, and into retirement. Xers believe their boomer parents suffer from VDD, vacation deficit disorder. They have inverted the boomer equation. Xers want to work to live. They believe that work life and home life should be harmonized, not counterposed. They focus on developing their own skills, portable skills, to ensure their career security because they don't so much trust job security. They want rapid feedback, serious mentoring, promotion, and are ready to move to a different company if the opportunity there appears better. They want instant rather than delayed gratification. Their rewards have shifted to more freedom, time, and work flexibility. This is evidenced by the fact that one-third of the medical school graduates of 2002 expect to work part-time, a response shared equally by men and women. They have become critical consumers, and speed is a requirement. They ushered in the technology boom of the 90s. They're tech savvy and expect the latest digital technology to be available. Their skepticism translates to holding little regard for authority, hierarchy, and loyalty is to themselves before institutions. These traits grate on boomers who have often characterized Xers as slackers whose work ethic doesn't measure up to their own workaholic standard. Ironically, boomers seem to forget they're the parents of the Xers. Last but certainly not least, the Gen Y generation, the Echo Boomers, the next generation, or millennials. 1981 to 2000 was when they were born. Estimates on the number of millennials range from 75 to 90 million. The dominant influence in their lives, starting literally at birth and continuing to the present, is the omnipresence of technology. First was the computer, then rapidly they evolved to digital mobile devices. They are technology natives, so attached and comfortable with instantaneous digital global internet connection, it's like their oxygen. Most booted up a computer before they rode a bike. And as young adults, 70% of them check their phones every hour. Strangely, even though they love their phones, they hate to talk on them. Gen Y has been described as like Gen X on fast forward with self-esteem on steroids. However, in striking contradistinction to Xers who were under-supervised, millennials were smotheringly over-supervised. Millennials' parents filled their young children's schedules with play dates, structured, safe play, and learning times. They carefully selected their kindergartens only after screening interviews of the staff and school administrators. This level of parental involvement continued through high school and even into college, earning the title of helicopter parents. Trophies and purple ribbons were awarded just for participation. These were the empowerment, some would call them entitlement years. Everyone won, everyone got a medal. Praise flowed easily and regularly. Instilling large doses of self-esteem was aimed at guiding the wire toward achievement, specifically targeting the correct schools, top brands, and desired careers. Wires could and would question authority routinely. Mom had your back. They grew up to be socially bold, and they expressed their opinion. They have taught to be accomplished, critical consumers, a quality that extends from consumer goods to education, even to making employment decisions. They expect more than just the right products. Members of this generation want trial before purchase, customized products, the ability to change their mind, and brands that deliver genuine benefits. The millennial wants what he or she wants, when he or she wants it, how he or she wants it, and they're not afraid to ask. They gained self-confidence, even became self-possessed. Some would assert they exceeded self-esteem to the point of narcissism. As young adults, they expect feedback, frequent, personal, focused, positive feedback. They have been called the most doted upon, privileged, and needy generation so far. They are the most diverse generation. They work well in groups, whether in a single location or remotely connected, using blogs, digital text, messaging, or social media. The pace of everything has accelerated. Peer connectivity is immediate, and multitasking is as easy as clicking or swiping. One wire observed, "I get my news, my weather, my directions, even my clothes from the web." They could exist solely in a cashless society, exclusively using plastic and electronic payments. In contrast to the quiet, isolated study space of the traditionalist, one millennial described his environment at study. The TV is showing reruns of Friends. A laptop is perched on the couch cushion. A student in sweatpants and a t-shirt, actively texting on the phone, email minimized, but the sound alert still active on the computer. A collage of browsers open, including CNN for news, Google in case a question arise, Facebook, Twitter, Wikipedia, and of course Abercrombie.com for shopping. This has been labeled continuous partial attention. Somehow it's said to work. The millennials experienced, if not directly, then by instant media, school violence, Oklahoma bombings, 9/11, AIDS, upheavals in global economy, and politics. And while they remain optimistic, these experiences have made them realistic with an overlay of fear. Higher education was a given, but they are stunned and dismayed by the expense. Student debt topped $1 billion for the first time in 2012, with an average graduation debt in excess of $27,000. But when they graduated from college, the wealth of job opportunities that they anticipated had vanished. Jobs were scarce. When the world refused to affirm how great they were left disappointed, a sort of crisis of unmet expectations. Digital media has literally reconfigured their learning methods. Digital gaming, often involving multiple players remotely connected, involves trial and error, a play-to-learn concept. Gamers don't practice before they play. They learn by doing. And true to their upbringing, eventually everyone gets to win. Internet access to seemingly every conceivable answer, whether through Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, PubMed, UpToDate, or other sites, brings just-in-time learning to the fingertips of wires. They show little interest in reading, and studies show that older generations spend far more time observing news, literature, and fiction than this graphic-based group. Millennials turn to podcasts, narrated videos, two-paragraph summaries from a wide range of internet sites. Now, the value of information as a commodity has diminished. It's the search engine, the access to information, that matters now. However, information technology is just a tool. Millennials need to understand how to discern good information from bad and how it all fits into perspective. This is defined as information literacy. Beyond that, information fluency, the ability to grasp information literacy and apply critical thinking skills. Millennials blur the line between fun and work, blending the two, intermixing time parceled to each. Where traditionalists seek lifetime careers, boomers seek stellar careers, Xers portable careers, millennials strive for parallel careers. They do not look at an organization to see how they will fit into it. Rather, they look at how the organization will fit into their lives. So what's the problem? The Association of Academic Chairs of Plastic Surgery conducted a survey of 70, and 70 of 98 faculty members responded that they have difficulty relating to the residents' work ethic. Business leaders have complained that today's graduates do not have the basic critical thinking skills they need to thrive. Wires prefer not to read, seemingly cannot sit and listen, and rely too heavily on a cut-and-paste approach to assignments. That's a quote. Further, another quote, they might be whizzes on communication devices, but their communication skills, both in writing and in person, have a long way to go. Some educators tend to view Gen Y as lazy, unmotivated, selfish. This view is shared in the business world. Older generations perceive the younger generations as having an entitlement mentality. They are presumptuous and want to be accommodated with their demands. To counter, the younger generation's viewpoint might be summed up in this quote. It's a whole new world out there with new playing fields, rules, and players. Your choice is to either learn the new game or continue to be the best player in a game that's no longer being played. Well, how do we solve this? I, as a boomer, typed managing the multi-generational workforce into Google search. In exactly 32 one-hundredths of a second, I had a mere 2,850,000 articles to choose from. We won't get through all of them today. A well-known and respected example is Generations in Work by Zemke. You can see there are a number of steps to attempt to achieve harmony. When I've spoken to younger generation surgeons about what has, or in many cases, what would they consider most valuable from the older generations, a few recurring themes surfaced. Because access to high-quality scientific material is readily available in moments electronically, just factual knowledge is not any longer supreme. One vital edge would be to meet face-to-face with key thought and practice leaders, I think like this, but especially in a setting that would allow comfortable, less formal interchange, sometimes over coffee. It would build interest, trust, collegial respect, regardless of age difference. It could facilitate a new level of open, unfettered dialogue for future interactions such as patient management advice, fellowship opportunities, even professional partnerships. Along the same line, what I referred to previously as information literacy and information fluency is often gleaned by listening carefully to senior surgeons' comments that are filtered through the lens of long experience. While this may be captured at a podium, it could even better be over a cup of coffee or perhaps a glass of wine. There is frequently a wide gulf of disparity in understanding, using, and particularly embracing newer technology between older and newer generations. Somewhat reluctantly, I speak for the older generation. But perhaps in return for the senior to junior mentoring in information literacy, the Xers and millennials can reverse mentor us in what we see as new, cutting-edge technology, but they regard as routine daily communication. Interactive presentations, panels, podcasts, even, dare I suggest, the dreaded 140-character Twitter communication could be considered. Cross-generational enthusiasm and wisdom would seem ideal. The business and educational spheres have experienced the full impact of Xers and millennials for more than a decade. We in surgery are just now seeing this huge wave of highly educated, inspired, confident, techno-savvy young surgeons swashbuckling into our professional lives. If we're prepared to guide and manage their advances and achievements, we'll be awesome. Perlbuck may have said it best. The young do not know enough to be prudent, and therefore they attempt the impossible and achieve it generation after generation. It's been my privilege and honor to speak at this Phoenix Surgical Symposium. Again, I thank you very much for your attention.
That was provocative, that was insightful, that was introspective. I followed you with my parents, I followed you with myself, and I followed you with my kids. So I saw bits and pieces in all of it.